There's something fundamentally disturbing. Having to do with consciousness. There's something you could say shamanic or transhuman that is always beckoning, always present. And we, through conditioning or whatever you want to hold responsible, shy away from the invitation or the demand for radical relationship with being and take up residence in a soliloquy, in a contrived identity. So we're taught and encouraged by the somnambulistic nature of the species at large to ignore, avoid, refute and refuse our irrational nature, the surreal presentation of what you could refer to as actual experience. And once that refusal gets baked in, like imagine your consciousness in a kiln being fired to a fine ping, then one's, let's say, humanistic identity is fired in, baked in, and covered with all kinds of glaze. So you are... you become a fine ceramic. You are ceramicized and lose touch with the irrational, transhuman, shamanic, disturbing intimacy with how we could say actuality is actually rolling. Most seekers then want to cultivate some kind of amelioration for their existential confusion or circumstantial suffering, their irritability and powerlessness. Which always remains superficial and thankfully fails miserably over and over again. But in a sense, we don't mind that our best efforts fail over and over again, because that means we can go to another teacher or another correspondence course or another practice in hopes of finding or cultivating some kind of imaginary amelioration for our own existential dilemma. So in a sense, we're soothed by the failure of one attempt after another because we're naturally fond of novelty, so we don't mind going in search of the next, right? The next revelation, the next hit, the next transmission, because it's fun. If, of course, you're a card-carrying seeker. But if the rubber meets the road, if and when the rubber meets the road in your experience, one's experience, it, I would venture to suggest, is disorienting, disabling, penetratingly intimate. It's not an amelioration for the imagination of how we suffer. You know, it's something way, you could say, more, you know, radical and disturbing than that. But we'd rather have a past life regression or a spirit guide than an intimate encounter with the dissolution of self, the dissolution of continuity, the dissolution of identity. It's way more fun to have opinions and ideas and frustrations and various forms of spiritual accomplishment or spiritual pride than it is to be wiped clean. At least you could suggest that that's the prevailing evidence. We would rather have a thing to do or an experience to hope for in an imaginary future than to face off with presence. And of course, the encouragement from friends and family and fellow seekers and the secular world of society, all of those encourage remaining within the boundary field of conformist reality. It's safe to go to church or temple or mosque or wherever and be worshipful toward a greater deity. It's not encouraged. It's not generally encouraged that one, you know, transmute into the revelation of the divine, the sacred. It's safer for us to be herded by various forms of authority, spiritual and otherwise, that give us permission to worship one or other form of authority. It's not typically encouraged to.
Is it too cold in here? Or something?
I'm moving.
Okay.
It's not typically encouraged to wake up.
So we need an authority.
Well, it's... it's kind of an individual affair. I mean, it's surreal. It's magical. If we are driven consciously or unconsciously to seek authority, to be given approval or disapproval from authority, you can't talk anybody into or out of that, right? So that's why it's, you know, you could say an individual affair. It's up to you if authority is a driving force in your consciousness or psyche or not. Buddha was cool enough to say, find out for yourself. I'm going to lay down a few tracks. Find out for yourself. But you can see how Buddhism has turned Buddha into an authority, a worshipful deity as an idea or once lived human that is now revered as an authority.
You think that maybe plays on our biology, looking for mommy and daddy, the divine mommy and daddy?
Well, sure. You know, you will find evidence of that throughout the mammalian primate kingdoms. Young lizards, I think, tend to scurry off fairly quickly.
Forget the roots.
Yeah.
Dive in.
You know, but ducks follow their mom for quite a while.
Or any surrogate, right?
Or any surrogate. That's right. Old jaguar will do. Uh-huh. That's right.
So maybe there's that spiritual impulse of something in us that compels us at times, consciously or unconsciously, but look up to something or look up.
The infant human will not thrive without touch.
That's right. Skinner sucked in his assumption that you could put him in this sterile environment and just roll a fresh.
Yep. Yeah.
And not touch him.
Yeah. Right.
Crazy shit.
Yeah, so there's no question, at least casually speaking, that the biology insists upon, demands contact and imprinting and all forms of, you know, psychic nourishment to thrive.
It's very interesting, actually, that touch is needed in order to create a being that can sustain itself. Otherwise, it's just nothing. It's much more amorphous. But unless you really keep pressing in on the sides from, like, hello, mommy, baby, this is me, this is us, with food,
yeah,
a lot of pressure comes in to form a being.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know of too many infants that were neglected that became realized sages. I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe they did become realized sages and then died really young from neglect.
Come in as a sage.
Yeah, I don't know.
It seems that infants are sages, right? And then
sure,
they are impressed upon to join us because it's so cool here. We will swaddle you and press you from all sides to do whatever is...
Yep.
I don't know.
Who knows? if we've made it this far, we were given enough so-called nourishment or care to inhabit our adult lives with some degree of functionality. And yet when you do a barometer check on the behavioral choices of the species at large, you know, it can give one pause.
And you have that contrast between those content in the abstraction world, like just dive into books and bring to life these worlds from words. Mm. And then others go, I'm going to climb a tree, I'm going to build a fort, I'm going to dig a hole, you know, I'm going to run around, I'm going to wrestle.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything in between. But, you know, it is interesting how somehow that impulse has us looking beyond what the senses would deliver to us and go,
yeah,
wow, there's another channel, a multi-spectral channel that can pick up, you know, 1,000 stations at once or something.
Yeah.
To use a metaphor, as opposed to WFIL, you know, or something. It's the freaking...
How old are you, Dave?
Huh? I know.
WFIL.
Wibbage and Wi-Fi.
Those are the local radio stations.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's right. I'm regressing in our conversation. Going back to a junior high body of consciousness.
Why not?
Recapitulating.
Well, that's where some of these things started to break through, actually.
Sure.
Because the five senses were like, well, what's this? It doesn't seem to fit anywhere. Has no context with anything that I remember in my past.
Mm.
And it seems to be taking me who knows where.
Yeah.
And who knows why. But I think what it left was, or what it does leave even today, is that no matter how much I can collect in having some sense of something, it's hardly anything.
Yeah. When
in the sense of content, substance, something you can bank on, something you can invest in, something you can collect and distribute. And I don't mean the material world.
We are ongoingly, ephemerally appearing. And the world is, if there were one, along with it. May I say a superficial way of presuming our existence is, right, an individuated creature, physical and otherwise, navigating, dwelling on Earth in a neighborhood in one's life, with an incredible spectrum of pluses and minuses. Getting through the day or getting through the life with as much, you know, joy as we can muster according to our, like, conditioned nature, whether astrologically imposed or suggested, or socioeconomic class, or gender, color, spiritual background. It's mind-boggling, really, to, you know, begin to appreciate the spectrum of what we refer to as, you know, humans and human life.
Reminds me of it. So I'm told, no snowflake is the same as another.
Yeah.
And it's falling through temperature and crystals are being formed and each environment is unique as it falls,
uh-huh,
temperature-wise and moisture-wise and whatever not. Maybe maybe that's how we're all kind of like differentiated in a way. You know, three inches to the left, two to the right.
Yep.
And you've got a whole nother being, a whole nother way of seeing.
Yep.
Even though it's not really seeing the whole in a sense.
Well, this is a kind of a fun, if not infuriating, conundrum. We are overwhelmed by experiential differentiation, uniqueness, and non-repeatability. And yet, though this, you know, delicious madness is ongoing, we also manage to carve out a groove for ourselves, psychologically, emotionally, physically, in all ways, that sure looks like continuity of self. Which is a kind of a, you know, an entrainment of some kind of predictability, some kind of repeatability, some kind of durability, consistency of self, when the actual experience is blatantly novel.
But if you know where the berries are, you tend to go back for them when you want the berries.
Well, again, we have this curious, you know, juxtaposition of the unutterable and I know where the berries are this time of year. Right? Like we were speaking earlier about the way the biology shows up. Mm-hmm. We imprint on authority, perhaps biologically driven, from pre-verbal, if not pre-birth, in our amniotic plasma of, you know, whoa, dreaminess, of which I have no recall. Some people say they do. So this incredible impulse for differentiation, for being nourished by touch and welcome to our psyche, has no conflict with what we might refer to as the transhuman non-repeatability.
So is it parallel or simultaneous? I guess it would be.
Call it what it feels like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like all the waves are there, and your tuner picks up this, picks up that, and sometimes it picks up it all, and sometimes it turns it off.
Yeah.
And it sometimes identifies it and says, that's me. And at other times, it's just simply what it is. Like, where is the self? I kind of like those moments in one sense, although it's unsettling in another.
Yep.
Like, wait a minute. Where's home?
Yep.
Out of body. Where is it?
Yep.
Or in one. This sucks. Heavy.
Absolutely.
Tired, or whatever it is.
Or overexcited. Yep.
You know, and impetuously desirous.
Yes.
It's that combination of words. That's the first time we ever use that combination.
But it sang to me.
Oh, shit, here we go again.
Yeah.
Kind of chasing the carrot, whether it's a spiritual one or, you know, one you can juice.
Yeah, we're just a big tribe of carrot chasers.
Oh, boy.
You know, you'd like to think that some kind of fucking spiritual conversation, you know, has what? Has some utility? Has some kind of advantage because it's, what, true? Or that we would toil in spiritual practices, whether those are 1 week, 3 months, 13-year-long retreats, 3-hour recitations of the Chandi, dietary processes, all kinds of renunciations, maybe tantric indulgences, prurient or otherwise, in hopes of what? Purifying? Spiritualizing? Getting closer to God? Winning you know, Sita's favor. And we do so in ashrams and institutions. It's the same working at Monsanto as it is living with Amici.
That's a bit of a stretch.
It's the same.
I was thinking of how enamored I was with the chakras and the distinction, and then trying to turn them all on, or just being aware that if they're all on, that's closer to whatever.
Yes.
Now, it's a little harder for me to kind of equate that with a Monsanto employee that just made, you know, the peak of the pyramid or something in their division. But without making a connection, see, I have this, there is an emerging judgment.
Oh, yeah.
Out of this consciousness.
Sure.
Once you slap them upside the head.
I hear you.
You know, and it's like, what am I seeing that compels me? What am I perceiving there that's saying, you're a dick. And,
yeah, yeah.
And I've got the shit. You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
Why don't you wake up?
You're a dick, and I want a hug.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah.
Justice.
That's right. That's right.
Whether it's spiritual or...
But when we see the institutionalization of consciousness, whether through the Monsanto meme or the, you know, Amici meme, right? Under the roof of the Divine Mother, I will toil and slave and stay up 24/7 and sell dolls and coconuts and beads at the table and work the parking and put up the rice and the doll, anything for the mother, for the mother, for the mother. It is the same devotional, right, fondness for authority or extraordinary beings.
Yeah, if the presence is like a drug, which I've seen that, you know, the people away from it and they're jonesing, you know.
It's the institutionalization of consciousness, whether it's spiritual or whether it's, you know, demeaning, gaiically demeaning, like our friends at Monsanto or all over, right? the industrial hubris.
let us design the genetic perfection based upon what we think is an ultimate state of a product.
Now, it is scary and it is appalling to confront powerlessness, vulnerability, injustice, foolhardy industrial behavior, misogyny, misanthropic hubris, compromise of the Gaiac biosphere for the sake of power, elitism, warmongering, sales of weaponry. You know.
Actually, I'm getting a really cool kind of zone right now that we're constantly morphing at our best state of fluidity. We're constantly morphing. So whatever's thrown at us, it's only negative or evil or bad when we lack the morphability. In other words, you know, the king who was concerned about being poisoned, taking arsenic every day, he gets poisoned, he gets a bellyache, and goes, hey, no big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
We're exposed to who knows what from who knows where and who knows how.
Yeah.
And somehow, you know, some of us adapt well and some don't. I wonder if that's true with energy and even more subtle experiences as well. I guess.
Look at the so-called and miraculous evidence of the cosmos at large and its curious expression and survivability, explosiveness, immorality, amorality, right? As it expands and contracts and goes wild every chance it gets with no holding back.
From a supernova to a red giant.
Yep. The whole, you know, arc of dust, hydrogen, gravity, ignition, explosion, collapse. Right? We're the same. fuck. I mean, we, you know, as a coming from a presumptive platform or place of individuated consciousness, tethered to body, tethered to mind, the bandwidth of what we're, let's say, capable of perceiving or dancing with can become narrow. Narrow.
Like a tractor beam or something really focused, something intense.
Like someone that worships the shadowy paternalism of a Donald Trump. All of the affection that is aroused.
It's almost like instinct in a way, like primal.
Something.
In one sense, rationality is just not relevant.
Yes.
It's more a certain hit. And at least, and I'm not even looking at them out there. I'm looking at me.
Yeah, right. Feel it here. Yeah.
At times where it didn't matter. You're in a groove and it's grooving. And then later you realize, oh my God, what was that? What was I participating in? What was I part of?
We've seen the culture, the species has seen wave after wave after wave of systemic, genocidal, fascistic violence and violation. Generation after generation after generation.
Yeah, I mean, as a boy, very cruel with little creatures sometimes.
Oh, yes.
A magnifying glass. And
uh-huh.
We won't go into it.
Yeah.
But it's like, I guess if you amplify that to adulthood and,
mm-hmm.
and concentrate that kind of thing, you can have bigger toys and bigger arenas to blow things up and morph things, transform things. I wondered about that in a dream. Why was explosive things and destruction so interesting in the dream state?
Yeah.
You know, and just being bigger than something that you thought you were. And it was destruction that was cool. It's like, what?
Yes.
And I don't know if it's a guy thing or if it's a universal part of this destructive vibration that's complementary to creation, which is complementary to making things stay still for a short time, you know, sustaining it. You know, I guess I'm playing with Hinduism right now.
Well, it's a guna thing, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But what was interesting for me is nothing seemed to stick very long. And I saw that as, see that as a problem at times.
Well,
where are you going? I don't know. What are your goals? Today?
Yeah.
This week? Come on.
Yeah, really.
Make something of yourself.
Yeah, when an employer, prospective employer asks you, what's your 5-year plan?
Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
He's like, well, it's definitely not working for you, asshole.
5 years. Wow. And my answer to that is continuing to be happy with whatever presents itself. And dancing with it as best as my ability can.
Yeah, that
what
sounds.
What that is? I don't know.
Well, yeah.
I don't know.
That's
I'm
right.
Still that way. I want to know what.
I wish I was happy with everything that presented itself.
Well, actually, yeah, that is presumptuous of me to say happy. I guess that's an idealized.
No, I wish I was happy with everything presented itself. I'm not saying anything to you.
I guess it's possible. Yeah. If it's perceived, it's possible. Unconditionally, right? I mean, not that it's something sought per se, but it's like, go ahead, wrestle. Wrestle until you have no energy, until you're exhausted, and then you're laying there in a pool of sweat and have no expenditure of any motivation whatsoever, and then something, well, I don't know, happens. Something, or again, the words are, at this point now are bound to time. Every word that I'm trying to find is bound to time.
Yep.
Like here's a state, and here's another one.
Yes.
And let me tell you what this is.
Right.
And what just happened, and what might happen.
We are creatures of temporal hypotheticality.
Now, in those quiet moments, that's what listening to these dances here reminds me, that almost every channel has this reference of some past, some morphing.
Yes.
And some fascination with the process.
Yes. Nice.
And replaying that process.
Yes. Right.
You know.
Yes.
Or replaying one that failed miserably based upon an idealized
reference. Absolutely.
Like the crystal frequency of, no, it went off.
Yep. So one's called it, one's curiosity, one's capacity to feel and imagine and articulate and consider experience can go lean into a more shamanic dimension rather than surfing the apparent continuity of hypothetical living, anecdotal living, living through implication and time. One's present so-called experience has the capacity to wonder aloud, wonder intimately, right, about the present nature of ephemeral presentation, the present nature of consciousness doing what it appears to be doing or being felt in the way that it's felt by the likes of me, here, now. And, you know, humans don't often stumble into a quality of intimacy where our intelligence, our availability can be free from momentum of self and like, whoa, wow, whoo, this, wow. Because this is presently intimate and yet unspeakable. It has no hesitation, no shyness, and yet you can't really occupy it.
It's like pulling a crystal out of a radio, and it just free, it free tunes, just it just runs without picking a channel.
Neat.
Again, I guess I'm in an electronics head now, but I guess in some of my dreams I've played with what would it be like to just, you know, cut the cord from the space station.
Yes.
And there's no up and down and no left and right.
Well, that's the invitation.
Yeah. Yeah. And then at some point you like jolt back into your body. What was out there? And that's even without drugs.
Well, it's we could argue it's better without drugs.
Yeah. Well, actually, the first time I tried mushrooms was recently, and it was a very familiar place.
Yeah.
It was like, oh.
Right.
Wow. Very tiny.
Hello, old friend.
Yeah, because it was sort of like an untethering from the ground of assumed being, you might say.
Yes, untethering from the ground of assumed being.
That kind of I think, therefore I am. Really? Active mind.
Metaphor as mind is activized. Our interest is with the recognition, firsthand encounter with the lapse of metaphor. Mind, or what's appearing in or as mind, as metaphor and ideation and creativity and thoughtfulness and consideration and speech and story on story, is right an impersonal, effortless arising. Underneath, to the left, to the right, slightly above, slightly prior. Even though, right, the silence of self is concomitant with the effusive nature of mind. Mm-hmm. We can't occupy, right, one, you could say, without the other. though, silence of self is felt, known, seen, clear as a bell. And there's a quality of attentivity, a quality of nourishment, curiosity, novelty, fascination, or disregard entirely of the recognition of the absence of self, the cessation of self. So this revelation of being prior to or just underneath the effusive nature of mind makes itself known. It reveals itself to the and with that invitation or visitation, we see more clearly the surreal frivolity of what we refer to as self, the inventory of I-me-my. Because a moment or a quality of unutterable stillness, unutterable silence, which does not have to be still or without sound, transcends the evocative nature of metaphoric association. Then that transcendence is here, this, now. It's not elsewhere. It is this. Just as the effusive nature of ideation and mind and self and time and location is also, without effort.
Funny, it's this kind of funny image where the mind gives birth to itself and then it powers a self and then the self thinks it's autonomous and it starts playing and then it starts eating the big mind thinking that, it gets bigger, it'll be stronger and better and it forgets that it's a facsimile, a play, an extension out of nothing, in a sense. It's, extension out of nothing sounds weird, but it's...
The actor walks off the stage and starts mingling with the audience.
The level of importance that I get caught up in, I'll say I instead of we, because we is very presumptuous.
Uh-huh.
Like I'm above the fray,
You're the fray.
I'm like, I got it down, man. I got it. So I can say we in one.
Yes, I hear you.
I'll just say I. A little peon.
Uh huh.
Just don't pee on that electric fence. The self giving birth to a million selves, and then trying to put them all back together again. over, over and over again. And then, like, that quiet you're talking about is like, how is that felt? Where does it reside in a place that says, ah, home? You know, without someone landing.
Yes.
You know, it's kind of weird. Like you said, it's together. All this thing is happening.
Yes.
And this thing that's happening isn't interfering with anything.
No.
And yet you recognize something. Something recognizes.
Yes.
Something on this ground.
Yes.
That is just without words.
Yes.
Completely sufficient unto itself. With no motivation.
Rock and roll.
To become something or not become.
It's not interested.
And it's like, it's there, it's here. It's
yes.
Past, it's future. It's not when I get my degree. Or
you can put a lei around its neck and any clothing and accessorize it any way you will.
There you go.
And it will not resist. It will dress up any way, right? You might wish to dress it up.
Now, thinking of how they would dress Sita and Rama.
That's right.
At the temples every morning.
That's right.
Do their calls.
Yeah, open up the curtain, wake up the deities.
And that's sort of like an externalization of this.
Absolutely.
Core aspects.
Yes. You know. Oh, fuck. So we extrovert to ameliorate disquietude. And we would be wise to learn, if that's our trajectory, wise to learn that extroverting to respond to disquietude, that won't work. Doesn't work. It could take a couple decades, couple lifetimes, couple 2,000 years. You know, who knows? The gift of the inquiry, the gift of any practice, the gift of, you know, the curious conundrum of living. Would be the discovery, the cessation of becoming.
Perfect place for a pregnant pause.
We are, to be bold about it, always of the nature of a dispassionate and transcendent feeling tone. This feeling tone is easily, susceptibly hijacked by metaphoric creativity. The challenge, the shamanic challenge, the transhuman challenge, the disturbing, disturbing challenge is to be curious enough, interested enough, to discover what this is, what we might be or not be, out from under the influence of anecdotal hysteria. Which does mean the rejection of our own authority. right? I mean, we're taking our own conditioning, our own consciousness on. We're taking ourselves on as an inner authority to see what it's made of, what I'm made of. If I'm not willing to dismantle myself, which you could say tends to be the the default, right? Then I will be a sucker for worshiping authority for the long haul. Yes? That's.
I want control, so if I'm the head honcho and I aspire to be that, I can take care of the universe, my universe.
Yes.
And do with it what I will.
Yeah. There's a million ways to articulate it, consciously, unconsciously, authentically, inauthentically, righteously, non-righteously.
Which is inverse to that, it's a delicious surrender.
Yes.
In a matter of speaking.
Yeah. That if I am unwilling to dismantle my own inner authority, my own inner credulity, my own inner certainty, belief, and superstition on all fronts, then I am a sucker for worshiping an external authority for the long haul. That's the conundrum, if I could be so philosophically or sociologically bold. That's what the species is suffering from. The externalization of outer authority, because the encouragement, the education, the intelligence is unwilling to dismantle the inner authority that continues to insist on a separation and individuation and temporality. I hope they invite me to the next presidential debate. Friends, let's talk about this.
Yeah, bring your trump card.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Transcendental Meditation gang out of Iowa. You know, put John Hagelin up for presidential nominee.
Is that the Natural Party?
Yeah, yeah.
Remember him from 96?
Yeah. Was it that long ago?
Yeah, I remember, 96.
Yeah. Well, that was the party of enlightenment. I was like, yeah, baby.
I remember that.
Go get him, Johnny.
Talking about, we don't need to fight anything, it's consciousness. We just raise vibration and things will...
I'm telling you, Maharishi has his day.
Yeah, that was cool.
He was far off that day. The Maharishi Day that he's going to have.
Did you say Maharishi?
I thought you meant the
or Maharishi.
Sage has his day or something.
Sage has his day?
Yeah, sure. If the sage is accepting of everything. But to say the sage is going to have his day and we're going to be in world peace,
yeah.
Vision of world peace,
yeah.
That's not what's happening right now.
No, apparently not. Yeah.
So the sage is going to have a day?
If John Hagelin had become president, you bet your ass.
Still waiting.
Well, we'd all be doing mantra.
Maybe the infection is creating convulsions right now, and the body hasn't settled yet.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely playing with metaphors, but these things kind of do dance in my head. Now I'm going back to childhood where all these lightning, you know, these big flashes of giant bolts going from pillar to pillar of white fiery light and, you know, all this activity and stuff happening. Like, whoa.
Oh, I thought you were.
I'd head for mom, you know, and go lay down. And
I thought you were going to talk about sort of a calm, starry sky.
Oh, my
but
God.
No, big flashes.
Holy shit, calm. Oh, my God. No, this is like.
Well, an interesting.
But I was raised in a bar.
What? Oh my, I have no idea what was going on, but it was all this energy. It's just like, that part of it wasn't peaceful. I guess the peaceful stuff doesn't wake you up and have you running and sweating and, you know, wanting to hang out in some comforting peace as a result. Wow, I don't know. What I do know is there's a delight in letting go where there is not in holding fast and tight, you know, to something, whatever that is. And then, because it starts to fall apart like that spring house. You know, the slates, it was beautiful after I cleaned it, and all of a sudden, crack here. Oh my God. Then I go back and crack here and crack here. Oh shit, it's coming apart. What's going on here? And the bullfrog will get out of
here. Literally.
I'm cool.
The bullfrog as Vishnu.
But, fucking with me, aren't you? Fucking with me. Because I'm like attached, like, this is cool. And it's falling apart in one sense. Now that's, that's what it does. That's what it does.
Feeling the fracticality of present ephemera, the root naked quality of experiencing.
You said fracticality, right?
Yeah.
Got it.
See, we become inebriated with the creative nature of mind through symbology. Language is symbology. Ideas are symbology. Sounds, tastes, smells, hearing, sight is, you could say, can we say internalized as symbology? Yeah, so we are inebriated, understandably, by unbelievable spectral presentation that in here, whatever that suggests, records or responds or suggests or creates through symbology. So through that inebriation, we're not sober enough. You could say this little dance of realization is kind of a sobriety arc. But the drug is not alcohol or drugs or sex or internet or go on and on and on and on. The drug is the present presentation of the ephemeral nature of experiencing, felt reflexively through memes or assertions of symbology that creates story and self and continuity and justification and righteousness or non-righteousness or the interest in sustainability and the bullfrog laughing in your face as the slate cracks under your very gaze. The practicality of experiencing itself when it's not inebriated by symbology is what exactly?
Euphoria.
Okay. Euphoria is a good one.
Some kind of stream, but it's not stationary, that's for sure. It's not fixed. It has no pause button in the sense of hold that, it's so freaking good. Don't touch it. Don't move it. Don't change it. It's like, excuse me. Good luck on that one.
This is a heartfelt, not that you need to evoke an organ in the body, discovery, intimate discovery of what is the nature of actual present experiencing if I am not distracted by symbology. And in the yogic process, do I have the good fortune, the wherewithal, the tenacity to discover, lean into what is the nature of experiencing if it's not being inebriated or distracted by symbology? We've known each other for a while. We can have this conversation. We gift each other with the permission, the affection, the encouragement to dream a little bit. Then holding each other within at the boundary field of some kind of political or social safety or correctness.
Yeah, right now I see myself mucking that pond. And then, you know, being in the mud, drain that sucker and just get that mud, put wheelbarrow after wheelbarrow, you know, off to the side. It's like, black and oozy. What's it going to make? What's it going to feed? And it's kind of like the inverse of the form and attachment. It's, the stuff gets washed in there, it just breaks down and breaks down, gets real dark and loamy and smelly.
Dark and loamy Sangha. I like it. I would go. What's the name of your group? The Dark and Loamy Sangha? Fuck, when's your next meeting?
People would come just because of that. Gardeners? No, dark and loamy.
Gardeners would come. Did they say dark and loamy Sangha?
I am there. They understand.
I am so there.
That's right. We come out of meditation. We all look like mushrooms. Oh, my God. That's the other side of it. It's like that, I don't know. You know, there's the structure, and here comes the pure water, and then it's like it goes into this thing, and then there's all this dark collection over time. Well, here's a trick right there. I just used magic. Time.
You are a bundle of euphoria. You are free to imagine anything and everything you want.
I know, because it's almost like, am I doing this right? Am I doing it like, I watch that happen sometimes. I get caught up with it too. It's like, where's the fine-tuned inquiry?
Mm.
Where's the sweet spot?
Yeah.
How do I communicate and say it just so that it's...
Why not?
You know, or, I don't get it.
The gift of the sage is that he or she puts poison in your milk.
Well, that's gonna happen.
That wouldn't be ayahuasca.
Worse.
So I hear, because I haven't had that experience.
Yeah. I don't really want to vomit, actually.
It's almost like really just getting past that control center, maybe. Because, you know, like those merry-go-rounds or the things that spin in the parking and the playgrounds?
Mm. Yes.
They would make my head, they would make my head really strange. I couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
Or the boats going up and down.
Mm.
And I connected it to how much control I want to be and to have.
Mm-hmm.
And to not be in control.
Yeah.
See, I thought it would have been you were all that much more sensitive to be able to feel that in that way.
Oh, really? Okay, I like that. I'll take that. Because I couldn't get it. Some of them were just like, more, faster. And I'm like, find me a bush and I'll grow up on it. But there are times emotionally confronted with a conflict that is just overwhelming and immediately feeling sick. Stuffy nose.
Oh, yeah.
Pain in the sinuses and just like, just like that and just like that gone, too.
I have provoked a few spontaneous flus in my life.
I can't remember, but the energy was a confrontation of whatever it was I was stuck in. It's like, boom, and the reality of it was making me sick.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny, I can tune into it now. I feel a little funny in the head as it is.
Hmm.
And I'm okay with it. A little disoriented.
Funny in the head.
A little funny in the head.
That's what happens when your divine or your divine chemistry, it becomes untethered from the fondness of metaphoric inertia. There will be, shamanically speaking, right, somatic gestures accompanying the untethering from, right, metaphoric identity.
Yeah, who would I be if I had no story to tell?
Kind sir, what fun. Consciousness presents a little differently, a little uniquely when we have no future.
Something already meant by hopelessness.
I would imagine so.
Out of that whole thing that stuck because it was like, what? Mm-hmm. He says, yeah, when you finally come to the place of hopelessness,
someone gets me.
You have arrived in a place where presence is will fulfill, in a manner of speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, it's always the next mountain,
yep.
The next valley,
yes.
The next house, the next
that's right.
Encounter with the masses that you're yes. bestowing this or that on.
Samsara is not that complicated. Self and time.
Samsara, self and time.
And self and time are the same. It makes it even less complicated.
No time, no self. Because where's the reference?
Referencelessness.
There's the desire to hold a moment or get rid of one.
Yes. Playing in this way, hanging out in this way, we, let's say, agree to look underneath the hood of conformist reality. Look under the hood of the effusive nature of metaphoric, story-driven consciousness. Teachings and practices are teachings and practices. They can only confer, right? Metaphoric continuity, but a sense of becoming, or a sense of hopeful discovery. That's what sells.
And admittedly, who hasn't, learned to walk in that manner in one sense or another?
Right? Yes, no question. Of course.
But at some point, you don't really have to think about it. You don't have to figure it out. Just automatic.
The revelation of being speaks for itself. Yeah, it doesn't require any further justification.
Yeah, I was always intrigued by those that didn't have to say much about anything and yet have a presence. They didn't feel like they had to explain anything, and it didn't seem like anything needed explaining. And then you leave that vibration, and all of a sudden the mind is just running, trying to recall and capture and enhance and improve and get more insight. And
that's the lifelong meet more, meet more, meet more.
But in the vibration, you're not looking for anything. It's you're relieved.
Quiesced.
Yes. In some strange way. And then there's a smile at times where you're not in the jacuzzi, the love jacuzzi of the vibration of guru, you might say, and the energy stays in one sense. Stay again is elusive. It's and sustain is also inadequate, because again, sustain is time and stays is time. There is no thought that you need more, and then there is.
Bada bing, bada boom.
Time to take a shit. Time to eat. Time to sleep. Yeah. You have to go tell someone to fuck off.
That's always a good one.
Well, I could have used that energy many times in the stories that I've carried to this moment.
Oh, sure.
Where you just smile and it's accepting. Something wasn't right. Something wasn't quite right about that. I could have really used a fuck off at that moment.
Something's not quite right about everything.
Yeah, the seductive platitudes were easy to take in and listen to. It was mistaken as a gift when in fact it was an egoic poison of sorts.
I hear you. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then it's not there and you're hungry. Or it's inverse. Someone's insulting you and you're smiling at them. And then later you wonder, what? But yeah, the self that keeps showing up.
You're on the receiving end of a nonstop onslaught of, 105 mile per hour curveballs. And each one is hitting you in the head. And you can never get to first base.
Yeah, it lands, it tells a story, it expands on it, and then it's off again.
It's like those little tiny hippopotamuses. You put them in water and they fill the living room.
Oh my gosh.
Mind is like that, right? It's like a sponge. It takes the smallest seed of nothing at all fills the living room. It becomes consuming.
Like that Sorcerer's Apprentice, right, with the brooms.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's 9 o'clock. We can just stop all this.
Wrap it up and get to the North Pole.
Thanks for joining us this evening.
A pleasure.